What I'm going to do tonight is read a selection of poems from two books published recently in France. One of them, published in 1976, called Terre des Diamants, which in English would be Handbook for the Diamond Country. And the other book I shall read from is called, in French, it was published in 1978, Mahamudra, and the English title of that book is The Bird Path. So selections from Terre des Diamants, Handbook for the Diamond Country, and Mahamudra, The Bird Path. The idea of this book, Handbook for the Diamond Country, is to search for a certain concentration, a certain density of life, of experience, of being. To achieve in one's life a concentration such as that of a diamond, or of rock crystal, shall we say. That's the life thing behind the book, and for me, in poetry, there's always the existential thing, there's always the life thing. That's a really important thing. On the specifically poetic plane, my attempt here, so far as language goes, is to get away from all poetic rhetoric and to avoid also simply anti-rhetoric and try and write a poetry as simple as possible with a language reduced to the essential. In a sense, to write poems without poetry, but poems that get into the essential. Here then is a short selection from Handbook for the Diamond Country. The first poem is an evocation of childhood on the west coast of Scotland. It's called A Chant for Childhood. Birch rights, empty moors, raw skies, incredible snow. Mussel beds, gull screams, lost islands, moon glow. Wet woods, heron shells, crimson leaves, dark rain. Hair pads, lightning flash, written rocks, begin again. A kind of incantation, shall we say, with this idea of beginning again, really getting down to the bedrock and trying to begin something new, something essential. The next poem is called The Territory, and here's the first place of concentration, The Territory. Up here in the white country, any tree for a totem, any rock for an altar, discover. This ground is suicidal, annihilates everything but the most essential. Poet, your kingdom. The white country, that's to say this place of concentration, this place away from the, let's call it the Technicolor cinema. And then we try to go further north into a greater concentration still to find the north again, as we might say. And this is a poem entitled simply North. Way up north, where the great wind blows, he is walking. Way up north, where the dawn light breaks, he is walking. Way up north, in the difficult land, he is walking. I said in these poems that my idea is to get to a bedrock language, a language reduced to the essential, as simple as possible. And what you may notice in some of these poems is that accent on the monosyllable, on the word reduced to its essential form. Here's another poem then, still from Handbook for the Diamond Country. This one's called Winter Letter from the Mountain. You may hear the odd rustling of paper, though that doesn't matter much. This then, Winter Letter from the Mountain. In this world, always harder and more acrid, more and more white, you ask me for news. The ice breaks in blue characters. Who can read them? I talk grotesquely to myself, and the silence answers. You may also notice in these poems the frequency with which I use the word white, quite used in the sense of a concentration of energy, a separation, a distance from what I've called technicolor cinema, and with the idea also that, as you know, white is the concentration, the synthesis of all kinds of colors. So continuing this pathway to the north, here's a poem called New Moon. This poem is situated in the town of Glasgow. The poems you've heard so far have been mostly in the natural landscape, but there's no refusal of the city landscape. And the city landscape for me at that time meant the great infernal city of Glasgow. Here's a poem then situated in Glasgow called New Moon. Always this idea, however, of beginning something new, from the old moon to the new moon. Here's New Moon. These walls have grown sullen, and I, lodged between a dairy and an antique shop, between a station and a library, read no future, live no present, sick with a bellyful of memory, my skull like an old tin can that rattles, yet the sun will move northwards, rising in the frozen heaven, and the day will lengthen. New at the month's beginning, the moon, on the 15th night, being close to earth and very full, will raise the tides like whales along the coast. What you have there is the idea of leaving the city landscape, perhaps even the civilized area, and the attempt to move into, shall we say, a more cosmic area, an area where the person is able to escape from his personal prison, as it were, and enter into contact with wider energies, larger energies, a larger space. And in that larger space, you're going to have something which I would call poetic yoga. Not just poetry for poetry's sake, but poetry as a yoga for life's sake. Poetry being more than simply playing prettily with words, much more. It is a life thing. So here you have sun yoga. Sun yoga. So much is gone. Now there is only the sun. The sun up there, white golden, bare. Maybe not free, but full of its own necessity. It's a world morning, and I sit here rock-like breathing, breathing toward the sun. A poetic yoga, as I say. Notice, perhaps, that line, maybe not free, but full of its own necessity. In small poetry, in little poetry, the bird, for example, is considered as something free. I don't consider a bird as free, or I don't wish to be as free as a bird, as they say in small poetry, as I say. The bird, for me, is not free, but it is full of its own necessity. It moves in its own space with its own difficulties. And it's with that I'm concerned, not with a simple ideological idea of liberty. Here's another poem which, like sun yoga, has a reference to certain Eastern techniques, or techniques more associated perhaps with the East than with the West. And this one is called Letter to an Old Calligrapher. First reference is to yoga. Here's a reference to Chinese calligraphy, an old Chinese calligrapher. Letter to an old calligrapher. 100 days along shore and mountain, with eye open for heron and cormorant. Now writing this at the world's edge, in a silence become a second nature, coming to know in brain and in bone the path of emptiness. Notice that the calligraphy here is a calligraphy which tries to follow the shape and the movements of the natural landscape. Notice also perhaps that phrase, in brain and in bone, no separation between the mental and the physical. On the contrary, an attempt to unite the two. And it's perhaps in the poem that the physical and the mental really unite. You have the body of a poem which expresses an idea much more physically, much more essentially perhaps, understand a more analytical presentation. Here's a poem called Theory, and the theory, I hope, comes across in physical terms. It's a bit abstract, maybe, but this abstraction is essential here, I think. The white cell almost in darkness. Outside, rocks in abruption, sea silence wavering. It is there. Rough-shaped, clifted, that quartz case given a short tide washed and in a good space gazed at. Cast, the first stone. Only the thrust and the not silver, not white, not crystal splash. No reading in the widening circles. Great reason grasped, the 12-worded orator walks on a shingle with quiet eyes. Notice perhaps that phrase, the 12-worded orator. Humorous, I think. The speech here is an attempt to reduce to the minimum. The 12-worded orator. That's perhaps why I'm interested in a certain form of Japanese poetry, which you've probably heard of, the haiku, which is a poem reduced to 17 syllables, attempting to say practically the whole world. Part of my aesthetic, maybe, is to say the most with the least. The 12-worded orator. It's almost a definition of the poet as I see him. Here's another poem situated in the Scottish landscape. It's called A High Blue Day on Scalpe. Scalpe is an island on the Outer Hebrides, in the high northwest coast of Scotland. This is the summit of contemplation, and no art can touch it. Blue, so blue, the far-out archipelago, and the sea shimmering, shimmering. No art can touch it. The mind can only try to become attuned to it, to become quiet and space itself out, to become open and still, unworlded, knowing itself in the diamond country, in the ultimate unlettered light. Just let me read those last two lines, which could be a conclusion to this selection of Handbook for the Diamond Country. Knowing itself in the diamond country, in the ultimate unlettered light. As if poetry was an attempt to get beyond literature into a light, get beyond merely personal existence into this diamond existence. Knowing itself in the diamond country, in the ultimate unlettered light. So much then for Handbook for the Diamond Country. I'd like to read now two or three poems from the other book I mentioned, Mahamudra, published in France in 1978. The English title would be The Bird Path. Here, first of all, is a kind of autobiographical poem. It's called Interpretations of a Twisted Pine. This was a pine tree I saw in the Landes district. Very, very twisted, moving in all directions, and it seemed a kind of symbol of my own existence, of my own multi-directional attempts at living and thinking. This then is called Interpretations of a Twisted Pine, as I say, a kind of symbolical autobiography. Interpretations of a Twisted Pine. I started off by growing up, like everybody else. Then I took a bend to the south, an inclination east, a prolongation north, and a sharp turn west. Now approaching me, be prepared for grotesquery. There are more than pines in my philosophy. Yes, I'm something more than a pine. I'm a cosmological sign. I'm idiomatic, idiosyncratic, pre-Socratic. I may be Chinese too, like Li Po, Tu Fu, or Mr. Chuang Tzu. I live quietly, but storms visit me. I do a metaphysical dance at the heart of existence. The branches of my brain are alive to sun and rain. My forest mind is in tune with the wind. There is reason in my resin. Behold the mad pine, stark on the skyline. Maybe I should just draw your attention to that one line. There is reason in my resin. Again, it's the idea of thinking in contact with the physical. Reason, the reasoning process, put in touch with resin, the physical process. Here's another poem in the Scottish landscape called Letter from Harris. Harris is another island in the Outer Hebrides, northwest coast of Scotland. Letter from Harris. The degree of isolation is higher here than in most places. The ancient foreland is continued in the islands of the Outer Hebrides, which mainly consists of Louisian gneiss, a metamorphic rock over 2,000 million years old. These islands stretch for a distance of some 150 miles along the west coast of Scotland and are exposed to the full force of the Atlantic waves and weather. Rodal, where the young men built the beautiful ship that the sea coveted, and where the great cleric lived who founded the grammar school in Paris. Rodal this evening is an empty harbor, a rusty iron ring, and a heap of red seaweed. I asked the old woman if she liked it here. She answered, "I'm here whether I like it or not." And asked about the life, she said, £1.50 a score of herring, £40 a ton of coal, 14 pence a loaf of bread. I open the book, and the words fly out of the page. Fallen, Anlagmara, Boda, Brack and Seal. As I listen to them talking, the remaining ones, I hear their phrases twining and intertwining like carving on a stony crypt or like the glorified lines of a precious manuscript. But when I walk alone, the rocks or the Macher, the silence itself is illuminate, and I do not think of culture or even of subsistence. The question in my mind is of going outward, always further outward, to the furthest line of light. Phone for the boat, Mr. Nicholson, Grimsey, 0870-2380. Miller Monday, 2 Florida Bay, 83234. Callum Ian McCorkadale might be able to take you, but I cannot give you his phone number. I believe he has the phone now, but his number is not yet in the book. Anyway, you go and see him, and if he's going out, he'll take you, and if he's not going out, too bad. Ronald MacDonald of Pavilgarry, Angus Cunningham, the Sapphire. The thousand shimmerings. This morning the sea of the monks is a thousand shimmerings. We think of these northern islands as storm-bound and mist-wrapped, yet nowhere can there be greater brilliance of color. The sea so blue, the rocks so vivid with saffron lichen. A meadow of sea pink in June contains all colors between white and deep purple, and the white feathered birds reflect the boreal intensity of the summer light. Medusa on the white sand beach. Color of brandy and whiskey are again infinitely pale, like the first clutch of living jelly in a Darwinian dawn. The disciple sits for long hours, silent and motionless, till he enters a state of impassivity, free of all thoughts. Finally departing from the self, he penetrates the domain of emptiness. A guillemot, reflected in the glassy water, shatters its image in the room of roaring waves. That's a long sequence, as you realize, taking place in the Scottish landscape, the northwest coast, the Outer Hebrides, very far out islands. What you may have noticed is the use of Gaelic, the original language of Scotland. You may also have noticed the difference in tone. For example, sometimes it simply consists, this poem, of extracts from studies in geology or the botany of the islands. In other words, I'm trying to use all kinds of scientific material. I'm using references to systems of thought, which are not the ones we are used to, in order to create a new synthesis so that poetry is, as I say, not merely literary, but can also take in botanical material, geological material, geographical material. It's an attempt to compose a whole world. Here's perhaps a final poem from this book, The Bird Path, in French, Mahamudra. Mahamudra, by the way, is a Sanskrit word. I make references to several languages you've seen. Mahamudra is a Sanskrit word which means the great gesture. And the great gesture, one is able to accomplish the great gesture when one has put one's personal life in rapport, we use the word in English, in rapport with cosmic life. Here then is the final poem in The Bird Path, in Mahamudra. And it's called Mahamudra. Again, it's a longish sequence, an autobiographical poem. Northwards again, you come and go, you come and go. Red leaves along the waterway, quiet walking in the rain. Feeling your body coming out of the rain. Then into the museum, my 10 cents in the machine, the rag arm mingling with the rain. Ah, no, your body in the dance, the red mark on your brow. Out of India, beautiful as a mare from Kashmir. Eyes like silver fish, long, cruel black hair, firm, dark round breasts, and the navel's lonely pool. All that I knew of India, all that I knew, centered in your body, Sura Sundari, realizing the wave beyond the ambiguities of love. For years you had followed your path, and I mine. Mine the more erratic, but Pratyat Mavidaniya left to the individual. You with a master, me with a madness. How can men of this age, of restless mind and lax intelligence, prone to distraction, attain to purity of disposition? The search among books, the moments, the flashes, the encounters. Seeing in every girl Prajna, the one aim Samarasa achieved through aimlessness. Glasgow, incandescent limbo, in my student's room with the sutra and the tantra, listening to India through the wall. Three engineers from New Delhi, modern discs spun for hours on end, smell of smoke perfume in the hall, and the waiter in the Taj Mahal. My soul is shaking in my belly, my heart is anxious for my girl who plays the flute, Kitsch out of Bombay, 1960, on the suspension bridge at twilight, the blue south. With the word master in Paris, useless conversation, the bamboo grove. Le zen, c'est de la connerie, mais les chingons, ça c'est des gars carabinés. Lodging, rue des écoles, 10 books a week, the ocean of learning, the white peaks of the Himalaya. Linking it all to a few root images. All truth ultimately within the body, the body-mind, word, flesh, image, bone, the inarticulate heart's true tone. As soon as the conscience is rid of its covering, it stands out naked, and energy shows its essence, the lotus and the lightning. Just as salt is dissolved in water, so the mind that takes its woman. In the arms of the knowledge girl, earth, water, fire, wind, and space too, honor them. So he comes into relation with every kind of creature and knows the path of freedom. Now the long hidden reel within the names and forms. The moment when 20,000 breathings reach their plenitude. Rain also is of the process, and the music and the dancing body, Abhisambodhi. It all whirls incessantly under the laws of change, but there is light in it. There's a lane of light flooding the brain, a pure flow of consciousness, a stream of colorless emotion. Let me just read those last two lines. A pure flow of consciousness, a stream of colorless emotion. That is the aim of this journey towards the Diamond Country, of this attempt to accomplish the great gesture. This last poem was autobiographical, as I say, existentially and intellectually autobiographical. You notice the figure of the dancing right through the poem, the Indian dancing girl. There then, rapidly, is a small selection of poems from these two books, Handbook for the Diamond Country and the Bird Path, Terre de Diamant and Mahamudra. I hope you got something out of the readings. Good night. See you some other time.